Frank, Hayes, and JJ.
Hit it!
It's time for The Frangie Show on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Ah, your new drug today is hot, hot weather, beautiful clinic today. I was outside today. Hot and wonderful. Just wonderful today. It was just hot and wonderful and sweaty and good. And JJ, are they really shutting down your pool this week? What are they doing?
Bad timing. I think you should probably do that in February, but they're shutting our pool down for renovations.
Was November not available?
I guess not.
That's my question. So you can't do that. JJ told me they're shutting down.
Yeah, that's poor.
It's like 94 tomorrow.
It is. It's
very poor.
So that's not good.
You want me to drag them out of here?
Do. All kind of things to talk about today. Today we'll celebrate the River City Rumble. Two of my favorite programs, JU and UNF. Have such great respect for both of them. Normally we would be out there if it was like a 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock start. It starts at 7 tonight at JU, at John Sessions Stadium. And frankly, it's 94 degrees out. And so I didn't think sitting outside doing a show at 94 degrees when the game doesn't start till 7. And I talked to the coaches, and they all kind of agreed. But we're going to have Chris Hayes come on at 4:15 today, the JU baseball coach. Joe Mercadante, the UNF coach, will come on at 4:35 today. So both coaches in the first hour of the program. And we'll talk about the Rumble and A-Sun baseball and college baseball. So that'll be a big part of our show today. Josh Pate joins us at 5 o'clock. Late kick Josh. He's becoming one of the respected kind of new media guys in college football, isn't he?
Yeah, without a doubt. And he obviously just got a first-class tour and some time at Florida with Billy Napier and Graham Mertz. So, yeah, absolutely. Josh joined us a couple times last year for our college football report. And, you know, we really enjoyed that. So it's great to that we'll be having him back on. But he certainly will have a fresh perspective. I mean, he just was in Gainesville right after the spring game. So he should have some good intel for us.
Yeah, great to have him talk a little college football with him. Some college football news. I want to get to the Florida State spring game. You know, spring games aren't important in terms of who wins and loses, but they can be important for players. I get the sense that tomorrow's game is important for DJ Uiagalelei. Forget the numbers. Forget the you can't win or lose tomorrow. But this is his first time in front of Knoll Nation. It's his first time with what has suddenly become a very successful football program, one of the most successful in the country, again, like it was back in the day. That's an important game for him, I think. Do you feel that way?
Absolutely, because I think Florida State has some young guns behind him
that
are really impressive. So if DJU struggles, I mean, he's going to obviously be the week one starter, but I think he certainly could be pushed, and if it doesn't go well early for him, you know, I don't think it's one of these situations where, well, we don't have anybody else, so it's going to have to be DJU. We're just going to have to get him to play better. So, yeah, I think there is pressure on him to perform well. And I think there's confidence certainly in Knoll Nation for Mike Norvell in the program as well as there should be. But I think there is a little bit of, hopefully, there won't be a drop-off. Hopefully, we can keep at the pace that we were at with Jordan Travis and Jared Verse and all the great players that are now going to hear their names called in the next 7 to 8 days with the draft upcoming. So, you know, it's obviously a year of transformation in terms of the roster. I think they're playing with some house money in that they took such a big leap last year and going undefeated until the bowl game. So, but I think you've got to have some reservation about, are they going to find the same magic? Are they going to find the same chemistry that the team had with its leaders that have now departed? And that's going to start at the quarterback position. It's going to start with DJU playing well and leading the way.
I almost want to make a comparison, and you got to indulge me on the comparison, okay? The comparison.
I can indulge.
Indulge. Well, for on a Friday.
Yeah.
You've always told me your best indulging days are Fridays.
Without a doubt.
And guess what? It's Friday. So indulge.
I'm indulging away.
You got to indulge me here because I'm not. Forget about national championships and Final Fours and Elite Eights that came later. I'm talking about the first 3 or 4 years. I'm going to draw a comparison. And again, Gator Nation's driving off the road here. So indulge me too. You should be indulging on a Friday too. But I'm going to compare the first handful of years with Mike Norvell to Billy Donovan. Young coach, gets the job, struggles a little in his first 2 years. There's some doubt. Was he too young? Was he not ready? Then by year three, boom, Sweet 16, Mike Norvell, boom, 10-3. By year four, boom, championship game for Billy. Norvell, without the Jordan Travis injury, might have been in the championship game. So the years were early, right? So there's at least, if you look, I might be reaching a bit, but you can see a parallel, at least in the first three, 4 years. So here was my question. Hayes, I made this point about Billy Donovan, and I made it back then. I was on the radio then, okay? Because I've like always been on the radio. And so, but I made the point then. Billy Donovan got there, and the next, in 3 or 4 years later, he's got Donnell Harvey and Mike Miller and Dupe and Kenyon Weeks and all of them, and they're going to the championship game. And then they all leave. And they said, well, Billy's great. I said, well, you're not really great until you can flip the roster, I mean entirely, and do it again. And sure enough, it took a little while, but before 4 or 5 years later, those guys are all gone, and here comes Noah and Horford and Torian and Brewer, you know the drill. And they win two titles. But he flipped the roster and did it again. So if you're going to make the comparison of Mike Norvell's early years at FSU to Billy Donovan's early years at Florida, he's got to flip it and do it again. Now, this year isn't entirely flipped, but it's pretty close because so many of those guys left. And by the way, I like this guy. I think he's a good coach.
I'd say it's almost an entire flip.
Yeah. It's pretty close.
They have a couple good guys back, but
it's pretty darn close.
It's pretty close to an entire, for a football team.
I agree with you. And so this year and what happens now is, and by the way, Billy didn't do it right away. After going to the championship game in 2000, it took 3, 4, 5 more years before they got there again. So that doesn't mean if it doesn't happen 1 or 2 years, he can't do it.
And they were respectable. They just weren't elite.
Right. But I think the eyes are on Mike Norvell. A lot of people are very confident in him. If I was an FSU fan, I'd be over the moon confident. But he's got to prove he can do it again after flipping the roster. I guess that's the comparison and that's the point.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, I also concur that he is going to have a wonderful season because it starts with I think he does know what he's doing. He certainly turned to me. You know, I thought he was on his way to getting fired. I still don't know how he lost to Florida in the swamp. When Greg Knox was coaching the Gators, but he certainly found some magic, and I do think that he deserves a lot of credit for that. The other thing, and we've talked a lot about this, you almost have to bring it up when you talk about any of these teams. Their schedule is so inviting that even if the flip goes through a little bit of a rocky patch to start, I still don't know who's beating them. Georgia Tech, Boston College, Memphis, Cal, SMU. That's how they start the year.
Right.
I mean, I'd be shocked if they lose any of those games. So that's 5-0 before you then host Clemson, who I would pick FSU comfortably to beat in Tallahassee right now. Then it's at Duke, at Miami, North Carolina, at Notre Dame. I mean, I'm not saying it's an utter cakewalk, and we'll see what they have a cupcake, and then they play Florida, which arguably might be two cupcakes. We'll see what the Gators are this year. But I think the schedule is so weak. It's not their fault.
Right.
I mean, you know, they're playing Notre Dame, and you know, and it's just they're in a bad league. And I think even if the flip isn't perfect, I still would be shocked if they don't go at worst 10-2.
Yeah,
assuming they don't have just a rash of injuries.
Yeah, and DJ Uiagalelei, for whatever reason, he got looked at as a failed quarterback or a failed prospect because he was the ultimate five-star out of L.A., went to Clemson, and he wasn't. All of a sudden, you're not Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence, so people think you're a failure. Well, the truth is, in the last two seasons, he's thrown 43 touchdowns and 14 picks. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
He was 22-7 his last year at Clemson before getting benched that season, 21-7 last year at Oregon State. So his numbers are pretty good. He's not been a high percentage guy, 57% last year, and in this day and age, that's not great. So he's got some things to prove, but I can see why FSU would be excited about him. The word was FSU and Miami were both in on Cam Ward. At different points, you heard both of those teams as the one that was going to get Cam Ward. Then you heard neither were going to get him because he was going to go to the NFL, and then Miami got him, which was interesting the way that whole thing, and FSU wound up with DJ. So I think that's interesting. I think they've brought in enough good players, both through the high school ranks and the portal again. So I agree with you, Hayes. I think they're going to wind up being a very good team. But nonetheless, it's a very interesting spring game for me tomorrow. I guess that's the point. I'm very intrigued.
I think not just with DJU, but, you know, who defensively looks good, you know, outside of Peyton for the Noles. And I think from a weapon standpoint, I think they're going to replace Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson. And as good as those two were, I think Florida State's receivers are going to be just fine. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see because defensively they lost a ton of talent. And the other thing, too, I'll be curious to see if – so the portal has already been open a week. But if you're Mike Norvell, you still have a week left of spring drills. So while I'm sure his staff is poring over who's in the portal and things like that, I wonder if they'll schedule it, align it better moving forward to where their spring ends right as the portal opens so that you can have those exit interviews and kind of tell the kids that aren't going to play, you need to move on. And it may not matter. I mean, we may get to Sunday and Florida State gets three or four elite players out of the portal and you know, it won't matter. But I am curious to see that portal component because they're such an attractive school. If they do add several players over the next week as the portal is open for that final 7 days.
Yeah, so it'll be very interesting to see. So, all right, before we bring on our first guest, it'll be Chris Hayes, about 2-3 minutes. We had a clinic today. It was hot, Hayes, probably in the low 90s. UNF and JU play tonight in a gigantic game, gigantic series, because it's JU and UNF. Both coaches were at that clinic, and a bunch of players from both teams were out there. On the day they play this gigantic game, they went out there to coach those little kids, 200 little third graders from Jacksonville. And I know I talk about it a lot, probably ad nauseum, but isn't that the coolest thing in the world? And by the way, FSCJ and Edward Waters had a bunch of players out there too. But isn't it the coolest thing that these two head coaches, on the night when they're playing, were both out there at that clinic today?
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's fantastic. And, you know, it brings just so much joy to these kids and introduces them to a great game. So, yeah, that's marvelous that they had that sacrifice.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the baseball community is the one I know the best, but there are some really good communities. Really good connections in that baseball community and people in that baseball community. They all know each other and they're all committed, and it's really a cool thing. So I'm excited about baseball. I'm excited about them playing tonight. JU and UNF, 3-game set, the Dolphins and the Ospreys. By the way, JU in what is now a 4-way tie for first place in the A-Sun, Stetson, Kennesaw State, Gulf Coast and JU are all 10-5 in the league, all 4 tied for first. Then after Austin Peay, who's 9-6, UNF, Lipscomb, and EKU are right behind them at 7-8. Isn't that interesting? I mean, it's interesting the way it works out. So I think it's with that said, let's fire up our first guest. JJ, fire it up.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
And it's my friend Chris Hayes. He is the baseball coach at JU, joins us now on the program. Chris, how are you, man?
Phenomenal, man. It's a beautiful day in Jacksonville, Florida, and we get to play a little baseball tonight.
And which is awesome. Thank you again to you and Merck. I say this all the time. No matter how big the game is at night, in the mornings you guys always show up. You had a huge crew of players. I hope they didn't get too hot today because a lot of them are going to play tonight. But, Chris, thank you for your commitment to what we do out there. You know how I feel about that, but I want to say that before I ask anything else. It's a big deal to me, man. Thank you, you and your guys, for always coming out for those things.
Absolutely. It's been our pleasure. Love what you and your group do for the community here in Jacksonville, just how committed you are to making sure you spread the word and the opportunity about the game. And it's just good for everybody. It's good for everybody. It's good for our guys. But more importantly, it's good for those young kids that are out there and get a chance to experience it, even if it's the only time they get out there.
Chris Hayes with this JU baseball coach. All right, I know you're not going to use the injuries as an excuse because you're having a good year. You're 10-5 in the league. But, bro, you can't get a break. I mean, God almighty, I mean, Nadu, who I think – Justin Nadu, if I'm saying his name right, of the former Bartram Trail, he might be as good a left-handed hitter as I've seen come along in a long time. Broke his hand down for a month or so, Chris. A lot of injuries on this year's team for JU.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, and if you start the season – at the start of the season, you know, you talk about us and what you kind of expect. And for us to be good, our guys have got to be guys. They got to be dudes. And they got to have good years. And if you'd have told me and game 36 that we don't have Justin Nadeau, Blake DeLamalor, and Chris Letito available, I'd tell you we're in trouble. And, you know, because we lost DeLamalor the first day. He played in the doubleheader against Cincinnati and then injured himself, and we lost him for the season. And then Chris Letito fought off a little bit of mono over the break and came back and ended up overworking and straining some muscles, and he's down for us for a significant amount of time. And, you know, and then with Justin, you know, it's just frustrating. We're frustrated for him, hate it for him, you know, and we dealt with it earlier with Terrell Brewer, a transfer. And, it's kind of the right now, if there's a word to describe the year, I mean, it's dealing with adversity. It's the adversity that we face, and it's stuff that's really out of our control. But I feel positive. I feel great about the group. They've been positive. They've worked hard. They're resilient. And they've been able, you know, kind of next man up mentality, and they figured it out a little bit.
Hey, Chris, who has stepped up for you?
Well, mainly Will Gale. He's a Seton Hall transfer center fielder. He kind of sets the table for us. Done a great job in center field and getting on base. And Terrell Brewer. Chandler Howard is a young man that is out of Lake City that, you know, got some time for us as a DH, big, strong, powerful left-handed hitter. And he actually is coming back from an injury over the fall and is really coming to his own. I mean, he's a threat from the left-handed side and a very dependable at bat for us. And then the other one is Clayton Hodges. I can't say enough about him. And the adversity that he's been through over the last 18 months, and for him to come back and now, you know, there were times where baseball wasn't a priority for him. And we had other things that we had to make sure that he was able to work through from a health standpoint. And now we're worried about, okay, man, can you make sure the barrel gets there on this 2-0 fastball? And it's a beautiful thing. And he is contributing and been a major part of our success this year. So it's really been a group of guys that it's the next man up. Everybody kind of steps up in different ways. There's not just one guy that's been delivering. And it's, on any given night, we could have somebody special step up for us.
Clayton Hodges, the former Episcopal player, what he's had to overcome, the injury he had and thinking he may not ever play again, and baseball is the furthest thing from his mind. I think it's awesome, the season he's had. I mean, and I know you do, Kristen. I got to spend some time with David, his dad, out here today, who's a friend of mine. So I think that's an awesome thing. Tell me about when you play UNF. How's it different? I'm going to ask Merck the same question. I know it's his first rodeo of this, but it's not yours as a player and a coach. I get the sense that the blood boils a little different when you guys play, doesn't it?
I mean, there's just so much familiarity with each other. It's a fun series. It's always great to compete with those guys. And hopefully we give our best effort and show our best game. And I know we're going to get their best effort tonight. I know we're going to get their best effort all weekend. But just the familiarity with each other and running into each other and working clinics together and the players spending time together off the field and just the knowledge they have of each other. You know, they've got quite a few guys from the North Florida area on their roster. We do the same. You know, so it's fun. It's fun. I don't think there's no venom.
Right.
This isn't a backyard brawl type situation. This is more, you know, there's a lot of respect for what – I have a lot of respect. Our program has a lot of respect for what they do and how they compete and how they go about their business. And I feel like that's reciprocated from them as well. And it's just two really competitive baseball clubs and programs that care a lot about the game, and neither one of us like losing, and that's what's shown every single week whenever we play these guys.
Chris, it seems like you guys are doing an excellent job stealing bases. How important a part of that has that been for the offense?
It's a piece. You know, we've got to figure out how we can put pressure on people and get in a scoring position, and you either hit your way there or you run your way there, and we've done a lot of running lately, so. It's a weapon that we have, and I love the foot speed aspect of it. And for us in our yard, we've got to have it. As big as John Sessions Stadium is and the field itself, we've got to have coverage, especially in the outfield, to be able to go get it. So we're going to take advantage of that on the base path as well. You know, and go ahead.
I've been telling you to move those fences in since you got the job. I think I might have been telling you that since you were an assistant there, didn't I? I mean,
you and Murph, right? Daniel Murphy says the same thing every time he comes out here. He's like, "We're gonna move these fences anytime soon."
Chris, tell me about your rotation. Who are we gonna see this weekend? Will we see Peyton Prescott? Will we see Evan Crest? What's the plan for these three games?
I will go Richard Long tonight. Okay. Young man out of Clay. Been so reliable for us, steady. Very, very predictable from an outcome standpoint. You know, he's been extremely consistent for us. So he's really emerged as a leader in our program. And he's just a guy I love giving the ball to. And then tomorrow, Evan Crest will go.
Okay.
And then on Sunday, Blake Barquin will start. Peyton Prescott will come out of the pen in a leverage situation, whatever that is. So those are the four. That guys that have started for us, guys that are extremely reliable. Tommy Allman, Isaac Williams. Isaac Williams has been so good for us on the back end. Young man out of Fleming Island. So those guys, I know those six guys are definitely going to throw in leverage situations. And there's going to be opportunities for basically everybody on the staff to do this weekend. We probably won't have a whole lot of patience with the pitching staff this weekend.
I can imagine. Chris, final thing. The league's jumbled at the top, man. Four of you guys are right there at 10-5, and then some other guys right behind you. How would you describe the league? And again, you're in first place. I mean, you're in first place with two or three series left. How would you describe the league this year? And I would think it's really critical time now.
It is. And we're actually at the midpoint. We've got 15 left. We got five series left. We're in a good spot. We put ourselves in good position, but there's a lot to be determined. There's some turnover in this league over the last year or two. There's been some guys that were very extremely veteran groups that you knew what to expect out of each program. That those guys have moved on, and there's a whole lot of new blood in the conference. And what it's showing and what you're seeing is there's some really exciting young talent, especially in the state of Florida. Kennesaw is extremely talented, but Gulf Coast, Stetson, UNF, and us, we've got some young guys that are making huge contributions at a very young age. So it's a kind of a new group within the conference, but there's definitely some really competitive, pretty good baseball teams in the conference. So we've got our work cut out for us, but I like where we are.
Chris Hayes, the baseball coach at JU. One of the best weekends of the year if you love baseball when JU and UNF get together. The River City Rumble is at JU this year, tonight, tomorrow, and on Sunday afternoon. Chris, thanks for spending some time, man. Good luck tonight.
Appreciate your time, fellas.
All right. Chris Hayes talking JU baseball. And again, Joe Mercadante, the UNF coach, joins us in about 10 minutes. But listen to this. Stetson, Kennesaw State, Gulf Coast, and JU all are 10-5, Hayes. Austin Peay is 9-6. So there's four teams tied. One team is one game behind. And then after that, North Florida, Lipscomb, and Eastern Kentucky are all 7-8. You see the point.
It's going to be a fun race.
It's going to be fun, and it is going to be a jumbled race. And I think someone from that top group, I think the two best teams are Stetson and JU. Stetson's 24-13 overall, by the way. JU played a brutal schedule, so their overall schedule record is only 16-19. UNF 17-17. But again, what matters is what you are in that league, the league winner. And by the way, it's not always been a one-bid league. In baseball, the A-Sun has been a two-bid league. I don't know if it is this year. The insiders that you talk to, the people that know it, Hayes, think that it might not be. It might be a one-bid league this year just because it's not as strong top to bottom, which means placing your – and by the way, seeding at a baseball tournament really matters because of pitching. I mean, it matters in basketball too because you get a day off and the rest versus rust thing. But in baseball, you manage your pitching based on the seeding. So these games obviously really matter for JU and UNF.
And with 15 games left, I mean, if you get hot, if you put up a 10-5 over that stretch, you're going to make up a lot of ground or you're going to distance yourself from the field. So, this is the nitty-gritty. It's going to be a lot of fun. And it's 7 o'clock tonight, 7 o'clock tomorrow, and then 1 o'clock on Sunday?
Exactly right. Two 7s and a 1. If you get a chance to get out to John Sessions Stadium, Go watch JU and UNF. Let's take a break. When we come back, though, we'll tell you the other side of the story. Joe Mercadante, the UNF baseball coach, joins us right after this on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Glad you're with us. We continue along. Let's keep talking baseball. The Rumble is tonight, as you know. Frank Frangie, Hayes Carline with you. My friend Joe Mercadante is the baseball coach. His first year at UNF was kind enough to be part of our walk-off charities clinic yet again today. Joe, I said this to Chris. I'll say it to you, too, before we get going. Thank you for how committed you and your team is to what we do at walk-off. It means a lot to me, Joe. So thanks for coming out today. And really, all those days, we really appreciate it.
No, it's great. It's nothing more of a pleasure for us. It's a great opportunity for our guys to get back in the community and share their love for baseball and put some smiles on some kids' faces, which is what it's all about.
Joe, let's talk about the Rumble. Your first one now, man. The kids all know each other. They've played together. It's going to be great crowds this year is at JU. Tell me about it. Tell me your thoughts about it. You know about it. You haven't coached in it yet, but this is a big deal when these two teams play.
It is. I think I've been a part of a lot of different rivalries, and I think the best part about these is one, you don't got to get them going, right? They're already ready to go. It's the motivation part is not needed. These guys want to go out there and compete against, you know, former high school teammates or buddies from travel ball, and it's you know, a lot of relationships that know each other across the lines. But the thing I like about the rivalry series is that no matter where you are in your season, no matter the temperature of your clubhouse, if you can get a big series win in a rivalry series, it can really do a lot and change the trajectory of the season for you. And, you know, you never try to make one game bigger than the other, but obviously we know the importance of this one, and we're certainly going to go out there and try to play our best brand of baseball this three-game series for sure.
Hey, Joe, great talking with you. You guys are hanging right in there. Do you like the buy-in from your guys for it being year one?
I do. I think, you know, they're doing what we ask them to do. They're competing. They're playing hard to the last out. We've had, you know, some unfortunate injuries and some guys were kind of getting hot. And we're starting to get some guys healthy. But, you know, every season, no matter how successful you're going to be, you're going to hit that adversity. Everybody knows that word. And we've had a little bit as of late, and we certainly don't have time to feel sorry for ourselves because we've got a tough stretch coming up starting this weekend with JU. But we also know and we have confidence that if we can play good brand of baseball like we're capable of, we're going to be in every game on the way out of the season.
Joe, who of all your guys, and we know your guys, we know Runnels, who's hit a bunch of home runs this year, and you know Cherokee's kind of my guy, and he's been there a while. Mm-hmm. Who's stepped up that maybe you didn't expect? Any surprise guys playing even better than maybe you would have expected this year?
I think we always knew Tripp McKinley, and I've known Tripp for a long time, recruited him out of high school, and he's been, you know, in the JUCO circuit and then was at sets and conference the last year and was just a part-time guy. But I always knew he had that really offensive gene in him, and he's been a huge piece for us. He's the guy that's hit anywhere from 2 to 5 and has been as consistent as anybody, gives you quality at-bats, hits the ball hard, and has been a guy that I just can kind of write him in the lineup every day at second base and know he's going to play good defense and he's going to give you some good at-bats. So he's been great for us. Javen Bates, the JUCO transfer from up in Michigan, he's been outstanding for us. He's a super versatile guy. We don't have a whole lot of balance, but he's a constant left-handed bat in the lineup that's given us good at-bats, can play the small ball game, can get a big hit when you need him to, has caught, you know, probably 80% of our games and also played a little left field. So those two have really stepped up and taken a little bit of some ownership in those spots that we needed to fill with the guys that left after last year.
Joe, what does JU do really well?
They're gonna pressure you. You know, Chris does a great job with that program. They're gonna have stubborn pain in the butt at bats. They're gonna foul pitches off. They're gonna work counts. They're gonna put some guys in motion. They're gonna make you work for it. And then on the mound, they've got some power arms. You know, you go through, and there's some good arms all throughout this conference. But they've got a handful of guys that can dial it up to the low mid 90s, and so that takes some adjustment as well. It's obviously in our game, you can practice and prepare for that, but it's a little different when it's coming out of the pitcher's hand versus a machine. So they have some arms, they have some stuff on the mound, and they certainly will make you work for it when you're on the defensive side and on the pitching side.
Joe Mercadante with us, the UNF baseball coach. The Ospreys are at JU, the River City Rumble, 3 games, 7 o'clock tonight and tomorrow night, 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday. Peter Holden was so good last year and is good again, so we're not surprised by that. But I got to tell you, I've known Rocha since he was at Ponte Vedra. Boy, what a year he's had for you. A sub-3 ERA. Tony's been really good too, hasn't he, Joe?
been huge. You know, you roll him out there on Sundays, and I think with the exception of one week, and he's given us a chance, like giving us a great start, giving us a chance. And, you know, he worked really hard in the offseason. Coach Petrowski and Coach Linder did a little bit of work with his delivery, did some video work, kind of showed him some inconsistencies. And if anybody knows Tony Rocha, he's as regimented and as consistent as it gets. And he really took some ownership in making those changes. And it's just great to see a guy fully buy in 100% and start to reap the rewards of it. So I'm proud of his first half, and certainly we're going to need him down the home stretch. But yeah, you're right. He's been such a great piece for us this year and means a lot to this team.
How is your rotation coming together?
We like it. We knew coming into the season, you know, Peter was going to be in the mix, and you hope Tony could do that. We've shuffled that second starter around a little bit and settled on Bryce Fisher, who's done a great job for us. He's probably pitched better than the numbers represent, to be honest with you. But now you got three guys that, if they're going well, can get you into the sixth or seventh inning and then hand it over to a bullpen that's starting to kind of get its identity. You know, we've got a couple freshmen that are really kind of starting to find themselves and understand how they have to compete at this level. And then you got a couple of veteran pieces that you can plug in there. But we certainly have to be creative with it, matching guys up and picking our spots of when we're bringing guys out of the bullpen. But I like how it's shaping up. I think it gives us a chance, three games on the weekend with the starters to match up and get ourselves into the bullpen in the six or seven with the lead, which is what you hope you can do.
Joe, 1 year in now, or in your first year, tell me about the league and what do you think? For people that don't know, Joe's been around. Joe's been at a lot of the Florida schools, but most recently at Pitt. So for a few years before you came back to Florida, you've now seen the A-Sun up close and personal half the season in. What do you think of the league?
The league, it's just like I remember it. I mean, you're going to have some clubs that are extremely offensive. You're going to have a couple really physical athletic groups, but everybody's going to have one or two arms that can take a series from you. So you certainly, just look at the standings. You know, you have some teams that you probably think are, you know, towards the bottom half, and they're running around every weekend, knocking off a team, you know, taking one, maybe two from a team they probably shouldn't beat. So the baseball, it's a good brand that there's teams that are going to go out there and knock off a Power 5 opponent during the midweek that shows you the ability, the talent is there. And some of these clubs are starting to get a lot more depth, which certainly makes it tougher on the weekends. But it's a league that you have to play good baseball. If you give other teams free bases, free chances on the base pass, free outs, these teams are going to make you pay. So it certainly puts some pressure on you just to play really good baseball.
All right, Joe, final thing. Your first Rumble. I know you've been in a lot of rivalries, first time here. Right now, you nervous, you excited, it's a beautiful day, it's hot. We all found that out this morning. What are you feeling right now, man?
I feel it's just an excitement. You know, I'm past the point of the nerve thing. I think I kind of try to treat it like the next game, but it's just another opportunity for our guys to go out there on a stage, which, you know, there's going to be a lot behind these games, and it's important for them to get those kind of high-pressure packed moments, because that's what it's going to be like when you get into tournament season, whether it's the A-Sun tournament or going into a regional if you're able to get yourself to that point. But you have to be able to learn how to kind of navigate and deal with the emotions and not go out there and try to do too much. Just understand that playing the game at a high level, doing what you've been taught, doing the things that you've prepared for, that's enough at this level, and certainly enough this weekend. So hopefully our guys can go out there and do it and just go out there and compete and have some fun.
Joe Mercadante, the UNF baseball coach, bro, you're going to do a great job building that program. I can already see it. I can already feel it. Good luck today against JU. It's going to be a lot of fun. We appreciate it, Joe.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Joe Mercadante, the UNF baseball coach, a good dude. And I tell you, both he and Chris, I haven't known Joe, obviously, as long as I've known Chris. But I know a lot of Joe's guys. I've known Pat McMahon forever, who Joe played under when he was at Florida. And Joe's a good baseball guy. And I'm telling you, Hayes, he, like Chris and like all of them, he doesn't miss a clinic. He makes sure his guys are out there working these clinics. He's a baseball guy. That is a great staff, by the way, very well-respected staff. So JU and UNF tonight. The Rumble starts at 7 o'clock at John Sessions Stadium at Jacksonville University. We'll take a break. More in a moment. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Now back to a Big Chief Tire Friday on The Frangie Show. Big Chief Tire. Visit BigChiefService.com.
I'm so in love with you.
I'm going to go all day.
By all means.
Whatever you want to do.
This is so good.
It's all right with me.
Tell me this isn't soulful, Carline.
I've deeply moved.
So brand
See, here's what happened. Can I tell you what happened? I heard this. I saw this thing on Twitter where Al Green was singing with Chicago, a big Chicago fan.
Yeah.
And Terry Cass was live playing guitar and Satira. I'm on this Al Green kick and I can't shake it. You ever get a kick and you can't shake it?
Sure.
So we're not going to talk anymore the rest of the show.
Sounds good.
We're just going to kind of move a little bit to Al Green.
Ooh, loving you forever.
Come on now, huh?
Is what I need.
Oh, that's good, Hayes. Come on, Hayes. You're a little sedate for me today. I don't like it.
Well, I'm just letting you have your moment.
You're enjoying
here.
The soulfulness of this, aren't you?
I mean, I'm very privileged to be 2 feet away from this
from the greatness
vocal
of it all.
Excellence.
I'll sit in there with my wife and I'll just be singing some outreach. What are you doing? I go, I'm being soulful.
If I had a lighter, I would strike it up. I guess I could use my phone. Right?
My wife will go, what are you doing? I said, I'm being soulful. I'll say, do you think it's sexy? She goes, no. Walks off.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's awesome right there.
Yeah.
Can you see that?
Getting the vibe.
Hang on. Can I do it? Can I do it myself? I guess I can't do it myself. I'm singing.
Yeah.
I'll do it with you.
Oh, cool.
It kind of loses the effect. Love Al Green. All right, there you go. I just want to tell you, I've been hooked onto the Al Green stuff. I can't shake it. It's in me. Well done,
you're
JJ.
An American, and that's why that is the case.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well said. So today on the Primetime Guys, they do a great job with the guest. They had Devin Lloyd on, the Jaguar linebacker. It connects to the conversation we had yesterday. We had the conversation yesterday that Trent Baalke said he admitted we're a 4-3 team now, which means in 4-3, a 4 defensive linemen and 3 true linebackers. So we said instead of Foye Luikun and Devin Lloyd being the only real inside linebackers, real linebackers because the two edge guys were outside linebackers, Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker, they have to find a Sam linebacker internally because now there's 3 linebackers. So you and I said, okay, is it Foye Luikun and Devin Lloyd inside and Chad Muma out there the Sam? Or do they play Muma at the weak side linebacker and move Lloyd out to the Sam? Or do they play Ventrell Miller at the weak side and play Lloyd? We kind of kicked it all around. Well, Devin Lloyd said today with the primetime guys that he's up to 250, and with the new scheme, he'll be playing on the line of scrimmage more. Well, then if that's and this was Devin that said this, well, there's your answer. Devin Lloyd's going to be the Sam, which means either Muma or Ventrell Miller will be the starting weak side linebacker, at least in base. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if Lloyd moves back there in nickel when there's 2 linebackers on the field. But so it now looks like the base formation is Foye Luikun at middle linebacker. If it's today, probably Chad Muma, but maybe Ventrell Miller at the weak side linebacker, the 2 stand-up guys. And the Sam who lines up on the line of scrimmage, Devin Lloyd, I think it's really interesting.
I think it is too, and I think it speaks to we've had this conversation a lot with Trayvon Walker, but I do think you can have it with Devin Lloyd as well, who was in the same draft class, obviously, of have they utilized him properly? Now, with Trayvon, he is I think, such a good player and such an exceptional athlete that he has become a difference maker as an outside linebacker, but he probably would be better to be a defensive end who also moonlights somewhat inside on passing downs. I think you can make the exact same case for Devin Lloyd. I mean, at Utah, he was a wrecking machine in college. He had 43 career tackles behind the line, and they've really never asked him to do that here. It's been more coverage, and he struggled with that. And he's been doing things that in the NFL that he really wasn't asked to do as a collegiate. So I think that they're now, with Ryan Nielsen, going to have way more of a streamlined ability to put their athletes in position to do what their athletes do best. And it's unfortunate, you know, particularly I'd say for Devin, because Trayvon sort of overcome it. But for Devin, who's had 2 decent but not great years, I'd say,
I mean, he was a first-round pick.
He was a first-round pick, yeah. And he's been productive. It's not that he's been, you know, he had that slump as a rookie where they had to pull him off the field, but he had 127 tackles last year, 7 pass breakups, 2 fumble recoveries. So but he only had 2 tackles behind the line of the 127. If he's playing this position in this role, he'll have double-digit tackles behind the line next year.
And let's face it, all of us, media guys, fans, people that follow the team and enjoy the team, we've all had the conversation in the last year or two What if Trayvon Walker played with his hand on the ground and Devin Lloyd played outside? All the shows, all the media guys, media people talking, you know, fans in the fan base on Twitter, whatever, have had the conversations. Would they be better off with Trayvon with his hand on the ground and Devin Lloyd playing outside linebacker? I mean, I know we've had it. Everyone's had that. Well, now we're going to see. Now we're going to see if it winds up, though. So it's really interesting stuff to see what they wind up doing. I said it yesterday. I can't wait till we get there. I don't want to wish my life away. I'm going to have some fun summer vacations and play golf and enjoy the beach. But I'm excited to see this new configuration and this new iteration of Jaguar football and the Jaguar defense. Let's get it to college football. We'll take a break. But Josh Pate, last kick Josh, is becoming a real mover and shaker in the new media college football world. He's really good. He's been in Gainesville, a meeting with Billy Napier. He's in Miami now talking to the Canes. I'm really interested in what he expects in this college football season. We'll do that in just a bit. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Time now for the voice of the day.
Now hear this.
Presented by South State Bank. Welcome to Banking Forward.
Frank Frangie Hayes, Carline with you. Thanks for joining us on a Friday. 1 hour to go in the program. Let's talk some college football. Josh Pate joins us now. You know him from his podcast on YouTube, Late Kick Josh. It's fantastic. He's becoming one of the real names to know in the new college football media. Joins us now on the program. Josh, thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like I know the state of Florida about as intimately as anyone could possibly know it right now.
I bet you do. And for people that don't know, Josh has made his tour. He's in Miami now spoke with Mario Cristobal, Shannon Dawson, the coordinator. We'll get to that in a minute. But let's start with your trip to Gainesville. You spent some time with Billy Napier. You spent some time around the program. It's a very intriguing program, Josh. Some people think it's a hot seat. He's not going to survive. Others think he's building something, and if has time, it could be something special. You were with him. You've got a good read on that kind of stuff. From 10,000 feet, what's your read on that?
My read, it's funny you mention it that way, because my read is from 10,000 feet, it's impossible to see Florida accurately. Yeah. I think probably my biggest takeaway walking away from spending the entire day there was how detached the overwhelming outside opinion of Florida football is versus what Florida football looks like inside right now. So what I mean by that is we go all over the country. And, I mean, I'm in probably 2 dozen to 3 dozen programs and talking to coaches and teams throughout a given year. So you're around the big boys who win at a high level, and you learn that a lot of them have similar characteristics. And then you go to Florida. And what's so striking is a lot of that stuff exists inside that program. But the trophy case doesn't, and the wins and losses, or the win-loss record doesn't yet. I think that there's a lot of validity when Billy Napier says, I feel like I've been working on a construction site for 2 years. And he means that figuratively, of course, but he means there was so much they felt like they had to overhaul when they got there that you don't really feel like you're just full steam ahead until this year. I've always been willing to grant a coach that, no matter the era, always willing to grant that. However, once you get into year three, I think everyone understands in a bottom line business, when you're in year three, especially in an era where you can overturn a roster quicker than you could in years past, from this point on, that's when you start to get judged more on wins and losses. So I probably walked away a whole lot more bolstered in my feeling that Napier absolutely knows what he's doing. I never doubted that. I just worried if a guy that comes from the G5 sort of gets his wheels figuratively stuck in the mud and they're just spinning at the outset, does he get time? This is not like the Frank Beamer era. That guy got over half a dozen years before they ever topped 6 wins at Virginia Tech. Well, Virginia Tech stayed with him, and 13 of his next 17 are double-digit win seasons. I don't think we're in that kind of era anymore, and sometimes it's a shame, but whatever you think of it, it is what it is. I think they love where they're at right now. I think they feel like they're light years ahead of where they've been, and if they lose this year, man, it will not be for lack of direction or dedication or personnel or resources, because they are top-notch in all those areas.
Hey, Josh, it's Ace Carline. Great to talk with you again, and thank you for joining us. We really enjoyed listening to your interview with Billy Napier, him talking about maintaining control over play calling, and certainly his special teams answer to your question I thought was intriguing, with him saying it was better than maybe people think. But I think the key to Florida is defensively. Did you get any sort of vibe on if Florida is going to improve? Because they've just been miserable on that side of the ball for 2 years.
Well, that was when we talked last year. I remember I was on with you guys when they had gone and swiped Austin Armstrong from Alabama.
Right.
And, man, they like that upset them in Alabama, man. They thought they had gotten the next coordinator in line there, and it may very well have been. And I think Napier understood that and went and got him. I think Billy Napier looked at the Austin Armstrong hire the same way that, like, a Nick Saban looked at the Tommy Rees hire. And that is, I'm going to go get a young guy. He is the next good name here. And, look, if I got to bite the bullet for a year or two, let him get up to speed, that's okay because it's going to pay dividends. Now, that doesn't mean you sacrifice the integrity of your program or you give away wins in exchange for that. But I think that, you know, they looked at last year, whereas a fan says, oh, man, they whiffed on that hire. I think they probably look at it and say, give him a full year. Let him have a full year to acclimate. Give him a full year to get his guys in there. And, you know, if last year's outcome repeats itself, well, you got a decision to make at that point. I'd be really surprised if they didn't upgrade to noticeably upgrade in virtually all the key stat categories. But then it's also about getting players at the end of the day. That's what that's all about. So that's the other piece. And we're kind of learning, like we're all learning about who he is, who Austin Armstrong is as the totality defensive coordinator, which is what you have to be in the SEC.
Josh, you hit on it though about the players. You go to all these sites, you see them, you go to spring practice, you go to practices. Do they have dudes? Do they have dudes on defense at Florida, in your opinion?
Not across the board. They do. They're walking around. You know, there are some. It's just glaring when you stop off at a Georgia. Bama still absolutely that way. We're gonna go to a few of them next week that fit that description. It's almost like you point out the ones who don't look like future NFL guys because those are the ones who stand out. That's just a big difference. I mean, Florida's got those guys in pockets. Yeah. You want pockets of guys who look like walk-ons in a sea of NFL bodies. And right now Florida is in the midst of transitioning from pockets of NFL guys in a sea of guys who once upon a time wouldn't have gotten an offer at the University of Florida. But that is not an overnight thing. It is not. And that's one thing when coaches say that, I'll always nod my head to, because it doesn't matter how much you get paid. You could double Billy Napier's salary today, triple it for all I care. You cannot speed up the process of properly overturning a roster, and no amount of money someone is paid changes that process.
Josh, obviously you're with the Canes now. Give us a sense of where Miami is and give us a sense of FSU as well as we look at the big three here in the state.
So let me start with Florida State because we didn't stop there. Would love to, but it just didn't work out this trip. They feel like, and I'm sure people down there have talked about it, I get the sense they feel like DJ Uiagalelei has really ramped up his level of performance over the past week to 2 weeks. And, you know, physical tools have never been the question with him, but poise and accuracy and execution, that was a problem for him at times at Clemson. It was still a problem at times at Oregon State. And, you know, that's a question when you get him at Florida State. But if they've got that from him elsewhere, they're going to have the players. They will be either favored or co-favored to win that conference. That's absolutely where they should be placed. It just, there's no need to overthink the room. Same way with Tennessee, same way with Miami, we're about to talk about them. You get a quarterback in there, and he could be that dynamic. That's what your season largely rests on. With Miami, they got Cam Ward in there, which is interesting because they talked about the fight to get him is normally with another program. Well, in this case, the fight was the NFL. Does he go to the NFL or not? So I go down there, and what's most fun is you can just stand off to the side, especially when a new guy comes in, and you can read the room. And the true alpha types are few and far between. But those guys, whether they're coaches or players, when they walk in a room, it doesn't matter if they've been there 5 minutes or 5 years, the room works around them. It gravitates and orbits around them. Ward is one of those guys. Cam Ward, you would think, has been at Miami a number of years. Mm. Looks like his team immediately. I don't think they had another quarterback on that roster, including last year, that fit that description. So they've got also a roster that can win the ACC this year. People are going to be a little more skeptical about that when you say it about Miami than Florida State because there's the proof of performance with Florida State already. Miami's got some good football players, and I almost think last year may have worked to their benefit because they were a turnover-prone team that otherwise was probably talented enough in the raw sense to win 9 games. And had they done that, the hype would be out of control this year. They didn't, And so the hype's going to be localized. But I think it all comes down to the same thing. They were bad in the red zone last year offensively. Turnovers were bad. Talked to Shannon Dawson, the offensive coordinator, about that yesterday, and he said, we thought we should have been much better in play action for a team that ran the ball as well as we did. And that's inexcusable. Turning the ball over in the red zone is inexcusable. That's what lost us football games. And you get that stuff rectified, there is not much gap, whether it seems like it or not, between where Miami has been and a team that's contending at the end of the year in November for a playoff spot and for maybe an ACC championship.
Josh Pate with us. Late Kick Josh is the podcast. You see it on YouTube. I want to go back to the Noles for a second, Josh. So I had the Clemson-Georgia Tech game 2 years ago. The Jags didn't play that weekend. It was Labor Day weekend, so Toretta and I did that game. And I was underwhelmed by DJ Uiagalelei. Now, listen, he got beat out by Cade Klubnik later that season. It went to Oregon State. Everyone knows the journey by now. But he didn't seem to have instinct. And you know what I'm talking about. The instincts you notice, that you almost notice when a quarterback doesn't have them more than when he does. But it seems like that's gotten better, and I think Mike Norvell's very good. Is it your opinion now that he's made that transition? And you've seen DJ enough now. Is he a different guy than I saw that night 2 years ago at Clemson?
I saw the same thing you did. It's just a guy. Sometimes the game comes like second nature to guys.
Yeah.
And other ones you can tell really have to think through it. They really got to fight their way through it mentally. And that's not something that's baked into a star rating. It does not matter how thoroughly you try and eval a guy in high school until they face live bullets in college settings. You do not know that about a guy. So it takes him longer, and it takes him longer, and it may be that he never fulfills that potential. I have not gotten to go to practice there. I do trust some folks I talked to there, and I'm skeptical. Look, I'm cautiously optimistic on this. It does sound like that's what they were waiting to see in the last couple of weeks of spring ball, and especially the last week, like the last scrimmage they had. They were really, like, overly pleasantly surprised that they started to see it. However, no one ever speaks ill of their newly gotten quarterbacks in spring.
Right.
So there's all the incentive in the world to talk them up. There's no incentive to talk them down. So you never hear about the negatives in spring. And I know that. That's why I want to go and watch it for myself. But since I haven't, I can only go off what I've heard.
Josh, do you get a sense that Georgia's heading to perhaps even another national title, which would be their third and 4 years, and Carson Beck a Heisman Trophy? Just, do you sense a magical year coming for the Bulldogs again?
I think that the odds makers will favor them. I still have some of the same questions about them I did last year. And when we were up there, it was before they opened spring ball. But Kirby, when you get him in the right setting, can just be brutally honest. And he was really honest with us when he sat down that day. And he just said, you know, everybody focuses on how talented you are and what your recruiting rankings are and what the mock drafts say. And yeah, like, all that's wonderful. It just means we have good players here, but you're only as strong as, like, your weakest link or your weak pocket. If we can't get after the quarterback, if we can't stop the run, if we don't measure up, if we don't meet our standard on the defensive line, Carson Beck could play out of his mind. Their receiver room could be the best they've had. Their tight end room, even losing Bowers, I still think is very underrated. All that stuff could happen. Trevor Etienne could go off for 1,200 yards this year as a back that transferred from Florida, and they could still go out in the quarterfinals of the playoffs because they can't stop the run and they run into the wrong matchup. So it kind of seems like the same sort of maybe mild question mark I would have had about them last year. Do they measure up on the defensive line? If they do, they're the overwhelming favorite to win it all. But I also think, guys, whether it's them or Ohio State or whoever, I think with an expanded playoff, there's a lot more randomization thrown into talking about this stuff. Just because injury is going to matter so much more when you play more football games, and you suffer the wrong one at the wrong time, and no one can ever see injuries coming, period. But you suffer the wrong one at the wrong time, and you could look like a world beater the first 4 months of the year, and then it all goes out the window. Florida State is a prime example of that from last year. I think you'll have more of that happen naturally as more games happen.
Josh, we'll see the new SEC for the first time this year, and it's a bad mix because it's the new SEC. Too many teams we don't know, we don't have a feel for. Now we have more playoff teams. That helps. What do you expect? Will it be like a NASCAR crash and everyone running into each other and everyone's got three losses, or other than maybe Georgia? But everyone's got to play Oklahoma. Everyone's got to play Texas. What's going to happen? My gut is no one's going undefeated. I'm not sure anyone's going 11-1. What's your read on, what do you expect from the new SEC, so to speak?
I think the best thing the SEC can do from a marketing standpoint is start to popularize the idea that three-loss teams should make the playoffs.
Okay.
They need to hammer that into the heads of the general public, because I think the playoff committee just works downstream of what public opinion is anyway. And the reason is because of what you just said. You're going into a world that, yeah, the playoffs expanded, but so is the difficulty of your strength of schedule in your conference team to team. And I actually don't believe that's pure propaganda, mind you. I think there will be three-loss SEC teams that if I throw them on a neutral field with an undefeated or one-loss Big 12 or especially a G5 caliber team would be favored. Now, I'm not saying point spreads dictate outcomes of games, but I am talking about us putting the right 12 teams in a field. That kind of stuff matters. And, you know, if we enter into a world where you're playing the strength of schedule, the likes of the Florida Gators, and then you got someone at the end of the year when you go 8-4 or 9-3 telling you, well, you are what your record says you are. Well, that's a lie. Yeah. In college football, that's not always the truth. So I think it's going to be an absolute gauntlet, yeah. And I also think you're going to buy more time for someone to start off slow and then get hot at the end of the year. And it's basically like the Major League Baseball wild card conversation.
Josh, are you surprised the SEC and Big Ten are getting along so well these days? And do you see, are we 5-10 years away from the SEC and Big Ten just basically maybe taking a handful of teams with them and going off and doing their own thing?
I think that if you just give it time, I think it'll happen organically. And I think some people in the rooms, respectively, are starting to realize that. You know, there's been this conversation in our space for a while. When's the big moment coming? When's that big eruption or inflection point where the Big Ten and the SEC hold a joint press conference and just announce, we're leaving everybody? Well, maybe it happens, but it doesn't happen that way. It's already in motion. When you're going to make 2 to 3 times what everyone else makes, then you just let that play out. And over 1 year and 3 years and 5 years and 7 years, the gulf becomes so wide that it's obvious for everyone to see. You two are playing a different galaxy sport than the rest of the folks who you used to call, you know, partner conferences. So I think it may kind of take care of itself without there ever being a major press release.
Josh Pate with us from Late Kick. Josh, all right, as we wrap here, and we'll do this again, we'll see you at Media Days and probably wrangle you in again if you don't mind, but way too early as you're watching spring. Give me surprises. Give me, is Kalen DeBoer going to be better or worse than you expect? Is there a surprise team that's not Georgia, Ohio State, LSU, whoever? Give me something to look for that maybe we're not thinking about, Josh.
Well, so we went up to, you guys are going to love this one because you did not expect me to go this direction. We were up at Iowa State about a month ago.
Okay.
And they haven't been nationally on the radar in a couple of years. And I think the major talking point around them, if you just ask a normal fan, is, Matt Campbell, did he miss his window to take a bigger job?
Sure.
And I sat in Campbell's office and asked him that. I mean, do you feel that way? Like, do you feel personally? He said, no. And then he starts laying out the jobs he had offered to him that he's turned down. And that guy is wired so differently. But what I'm excited about is they're top five in returning production this year. They got a quarterback up there. I think the entire country will know him better about midway through this season. His name's Rocco Beck. Came on really strong last year. That kid had offers from some major programs that would have doubled or tripled the money he makes. And he stayed there, and that locker room's responded to it, and that coaching staff, I think, really responded to it because the kid legitimately chose Iowa State when there were other options. And that Big 12 is going to be so wide open. I think 8 or 9 different teams could win that thing. And I think even though it may not produce a national champ, that conference, it may be the most fun to watch in the country this year.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Josh Pate, it's Late Kick, Josh. You see the podcast. You see him on YouTube. Josh, great work as always. Look forward to seeing you in Dallas, if not before, and we'll catch up again. But, Josh, thanks for spending some time, man. We sure appreciate it.
I appreciate it, guys.
Okay, Josh Pate, and boy, does he do a good job talking college football.
Absolutely.
I mean, he right now, as far as for what we do on radio shows like this, might be about as good as there is. You know that?
Yeah.
He's available. He really knows that. He just went to Gainesville and spent time with Napier. He just went to Miami and spent time with Cristobal. I mean, that's a cat that knows his stuff. You know that?
no doubt about it. He's a great guest and a wealth of knowledge. And I haven't heard anybody answer the SEC Big Ten question the way Josh did, but he has a fair point. Maybe there is no massive announcement.
It just organically happens. Yeah, which makes some sense, which makes a lot of sense. His comments, too, about FSU are interesting. JJ, he also thinks, I found this interesting, that Miami, if they ever figure it out, has a championship roster. Do you think that? Did that surprise you?
Well, I don't know about ACC championship, yes. Get into the playoff. Absolutely. I mean, last year I thought the defense was one of the best in the nation, but they just had zero quarterback play, and that obviously says, you know, the most about your team, and hopefully Cam Ward stays healthy, and yeah, I could definitely see Miami being up there with Florida State and Clemson when it's all said and done.
I'll say this, to your point, I agree with. Tyler Van Dyke was terrible for whatever reason. Why he became terrible, I don't know.
He was like great, and then he wasn't, and then he was all right, and then he was terrible again. Then, it was a roller coaster.
And the 6'5 freshman guy that everybody loved, I didn't think he was any good either. What was his name? The 6'5 freshman kid?
The one who played against Florida State?
Yeah, the freshman.
He wasn't any good either. No, he wasn't. He completed like four passes.
Is he the one that broke the elbow?
Yes.
Yeah, but the point is, neither one of them are any good. So if Cam Ward's really good, like people suggest, I hear you. I think they may be pretty good.
If they go into the swamp, I'm not saying that the Gators are anything to write home about.
That's an important game for both.
But if you can
go into the swamp in game one and win, which I have to believe it's at night, I mean, that is a testament to your toughness as a club. Because Utah, I have all the respect in the world for. And 2 years ago, in Napier's first game, when Florida, I mean, they really haven't figured out a lot of things, but they really didn't know what was going on then. Managed to beat a Utah team that I believe went on to the Rose Bowl that year. So that game is huge for both teams. Yeah, absolutely.
Man.
That's a difficult week one assignment.
Yeah.
And if Miami can get out of there with a win, even if Florida is subpar, that speaks volumes about the progress they've made.
I need a headline.
Let's do it.
In fact, I need headlines.
Okay. Plural. I've got two.
You got two?
Yeah.
Two
be a quick segment.
Two will do it. Back in a moment with Hayes Headlines. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Gather round.
It's Hayes' Headlines, presented by Harrell & Harrell. Don't settle for less than you deserve. Hear all about it. Here's Hayes Carline.
All right, welcome back to the Frangie Show. Frank Frangie, JJ LaSelva. I am Hayes Carline.
You know what I'm doing right now?
What's that?
I'm not settling for less than I deserve.
Good.
So you better bring it.
Should you.
I'm not settling. So, yes. I mean, it's Friday. It's 5:28. I'm going to watch a baseball game tonight. The alma mater's trying to win the Gateway title. So you better bring it. That's all I'm saying.
That's awesome. And, yes, give my buddy Holt a call at 251-1111. All right, Frank, let's dive in. The Jaguars are re-signing Tyler Shatley. How about that?
I love Tyler Shatley.
Yeah.
Tyler Shatley, by the way, is a pretty good player.
Yeah.
He's not athletic, so he's not going to be – he's not a guy that's going to get downfield. You're not going to see him 20 yards downfield on a screen pass running stride for stride with Travis Etienne the way Ezra Cleveland was. But as far as football in a phone booth and physicality and a reliable backup that can play center or either of those guard spots – he's a pretty good player. Glad he's going to be on the team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Bob McGinn is putting out his draft preview steadily. McGinn covered the Packers for four decades. He's been one of the top draft analysts. He does such a great job of getting these scouts to talk anonymously about these upcoming players. So he's got his quarterbacks out today, and man, is there a football official that's got some criticism for Caleb Williams. Now, again, this is just one person's opinion. But the official says he ended up in the stands after the loss to Washington crying like a baby. For a lot of scouts, that was a disqualifier. Then you've got the painted fingernails, the cars, special treatment. He knows one offense, which you can write on a piece of paper with Lincoln Riley. Of all those OU quarterbacks, he's the most gifted, but none of them have really done it in the league. And Caleb's workout at his pro day wasn't god-awful, but just mediocre. According to another official, his father, Carl, told him, quote, "It's too windy in Chicago. Why should we go to Chicago when the open-air stadium is not a place Caleb will like?" The official followed up with saying, quote, "You talk about a self-serving, vicariously living through your son. He needs to get away from his old man. I like the kid. He gets a little caught up in that LA crap, but once he gets with somebody strong, he'll be fine. because Lincoln Riley's not a strong guy either.
This is the time of year that comes out. Whether it's right, wrong, or somewhere in between, this is 1 week. You're now 1 week from the draft. You're now going to hear good things about a guy you never heard before. And Hayes, you're going to hear bad things about a guy that nobody said before. Everybody wants to weigh in on that. Remember now, all these people that the draft is their business, and there's a lot of them, they only got six more days. And then they go away for a year,
right,
or at least 9 months. So everybody with an opinion about a draft pick, they're going to empty the tank, bro. Everything you haven't heard from these guys, you're about to hear in the next week.
So McGinn does a point system, and that's how he ranks the quarterbacks because he talks to so many scouts and executives. So Jordan Travis checked in at 10th best quarterback in this draft. One scout says he was having a hell of a year, really made some strides. He benefited from more playing time and how he saw the field. I could see him going 5th round because of the injury, but keep him on your 53-man roster as a number 3 and develop him.
I'll say this about Jordan Travis. If he can make the throws, forget everything else. If he can make the throws, all the NFL throws, then he's got a chance to be a really good player. Denny Thompson said he had an 8 on a scale of 10 of an NFL arm. Now, again, he's one of Denny's guys. But if he's got that, I mean, Gardner Minshew's got on a scale of 10 on an NFL arm, a 6?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, okay. So if Jordan Travis has an 8 on a scale of NFL arm, and by the way, I didn't see that. I saw the magic, wonderful kid, incredible playmaker, but I didn't see an 8 out of 10 in an NFL arm. But if Denny's right about that, look out.
We are going to officially have the helmet communication in college football this year and the 2-minute warning, Frank.
Yeah, I don't like the 2-minute warning in college. Why would they do that? I don't mind lengthening
why
the game.
Why does it exist in the NFL?
Well, you know, I don't.
In a commercial break.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know why it did it all along, but that I don't. I don't want college to be that much like NFL. I don't want all of a sudden 2 feet in bounds. I don't like the fact that the clock no longer stops on first downs. I like the difference in the college and the pro games in that regard. So I don't need the 2-minute warning. Helmet communication, of course you should have that. Why we haven't had that all along once it was once you could do it technically. I don't know why, but I don't like the 2-minute warning. Do you? Do you like the 2-minute warning?
It doesn't really matter to me, so I'll get used to that. I just, in terms of the helmet communication, I'm glad it's here.
Yeah.
But boy, I feel bad for Graham Mertz because Florida's going to have a bunch of delay of games with Billy Napier sending in those plays. It's probably.
All right, now yeah, we're going
I mean,
to.
Right. It's going to be like, this is going to be it. It's going to be like, yeah, no, this play, it gives us a great opportunity for a first down and maybe a touchdown. Okay, watch the safeties here. Let's go trips, banana, 47, spider, Y, zig out, and let's do it on 4. And that's what Graham Mertz is going to have to deal with.
By the way, that was fantastic.
Thank you.
But you left out the rights.
Ah, that's right. Yeah.
X, Y, banana, Z, right.
Yeah.
13, 4. Let's... That was fantastic. Great. Well done.
Thank you, sir. Jaden Rashada is transferring from Arizona State, so it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. He was, of course, the center of, I don't know about scandal, but certainly Florida's NIL under its old collective disintegrating.
Listen, I saw somewhere somebody thought that Georgia is the odds-on favorite to get him.
Why would they take him?
There's no chance. No chance Kirby Smart has watched that tape and has taken Jaden Rashada. There's no... Does he take Trevor Etienne? Absolutely, because Trevor Etienne's a baller, and Kirby Smart can get about who he wants. There's no chance he's taking Jaden. I've seen enough tape. I saw enough of his play at Arizona State last year. There's not a chance Kirby Smart needs that.
I would agree. I thought this was stunning in terms of NIL. FedEx, which is based in Memphis, is giving the University of Memphis's athletic department $25 million in NIL funds. They will donate $5 million a year over the next 5 years. So do not schedule Memphis.
Yeah. The inside talk is Power 5 programs, the big ones, and Memphis is not one. They want to operate on about a $20 million budget. They want to operate about a $20 million NIL budget a year with probably 60% of that going to football, another 25 or 30 going to men's basketball, another 20% going to men's basketball, and then the final 20% goes to a handful of other sports. That's kind of the way the NIL world works. Well, that's $5 million of it from one company.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be interesting to see if Memphis starts to take off in the coming years once that kicks in. All right, local sensation looking at golf. Miles Russell, we talked about this 15-year-old yesterday, local product. He is 4-under for the day, 7-under for this event. It is a Korn Ferry event. This is a PGA Tour-sanctioned event. He is currently tied for 34th. He's got 9 holes to play left today, so Miles Russell, what a story.
Can I make an admission to you here on a Friday afternoon on the First Coast? I kind of half heard that story yesterday and the last couple of days. I'm an idiot now. Let me preface it while I'm kind of an idiot. I was somehow thinking he was in this junior tournament. He's in a Korn Ferry event.
Yeah.
That's the next one down from the tour.
Right.
There's guys, JJ was talking during the break, there's former tour players on it. There's a bunch of guys close to getting their card. And this 15-year-old is going toe-to-toe with them. It's really an amazing story.
He's a lefty, by the way.
Yeah, I saw the video. I see him putting left-handed. It's pretty amazing.
It really is. Congratulations, Miles. JU hosts UNF in baseball for a 3-game series this weekend, starting tonight at 7 o'clock. Both coaches joined us earlier. The Dolphins are in a 4-way tie for first in A-Sun play at 10-5. The Ospreys are 7-8 in a 3-way tie for sixth. And how awesome both coaches at the walk-off clinic today, Frank.
Yeah, they really were. On a hot day, both Joe Mercadante, the UNF coach, and Chris Hayes, the JU coach, no matter what the circumstance, no matter who they're playing that night, including each other, they come out to those walk-off clinics. Hayes, we had a bunch of players from JU, from UNF, from Edward Waters, from FSCJ, high school coaches. The baseball community is a special group. It really is, and it was great seeing them out there.
The draft is now just 6 days away. ESPN getting everybody excited with a tweet. I'll give Roger Goodell credit because he gets booed and he gets. I think he does a good job as commissioner, but publicly most people don't like him. But Roger Goodell today in a video promoting the draft with Eminem, the Detroit product, the fantastic rapper. Here is the audio from that.
I'm Eminem. This is Roger Goodell, and we are so fired up this year for the NFL draft.
Live from the D.
You can just say Detroit.
That's what I said.
You said the D.
Detroit!
Am I being punked?
The D.
You gotta give Roger credit.
Yeah, he's
trying.
He's trying.
He's trying.
Right. Well, let me just tell you this. Roger Goodell is my age, okay? And there's nothing more hip than a 65-year-old white guy trying to be hip.
Yeah.
There's nothing more special than that.
Well, like, Eminem's your age, too.
Yeah.
He's also a white guy trying to act hip.
Yeah, somehow he pulls it off a little
better.
Yeah,
he does.
Happy birthday to the old ball coach. Steve Spurrier will turn 79 tomorrow.
Yeah.
One of the greatest to ever do it.
And we had him on the show with us last week, and it's always a joy to have the ball coach on, and he's one of my favorite people. He's probably my favorite coach of all time to cover, to watch, to be around. 79 years old, and listen, his arthritis has made it hard on him. He played in the league a lot of times, but other than that, he looks great. He's playing golf, and good for the ball coach. Happy birthday to Stephen Orsberger.
JJ, give us a little Spurrier.
God has smiled on the Gators, no question about it. Texas did what they had to do, and then Ohio State did it. Of course, we hadn't won it yet. We got to wait on the vote tomorrow. Hopefully it'll work out, but, you know, God smiled on us, and Danny Warf was the best. He's the best player to ever play college quarterback, I'll tell you that.
That was, of course, after Florida defeated Florida State 52-20 in the Sugar Bowl to clinch their first national championship in the 1996 season. All right, moving on to a sad story. Football executive Bill Tobin died today at the age of 83, a great football guy who gave us perhaps the best draft soundbite in history.
One question, Bill. A lot of criticism about not taking a quarterback here. Your response?
Well, you know, we got a guy up there. Who in the hell is Mel Kiper, in a way? I mean, here's a guy that criticizes everybody, whoever they take. He's got the answers to who you should take and who you shouldn't take. In my knowledge of him, he's never ever put on a jock strap. He's never been a coach. He's never been a scout. He's never been an administrator. And all of a sudden, he's an expert. He's in our papers 2 days ago telling us who we have to take. We don't have to take anybody that Mel Kiper says we have to take. Mel Kiper has no more credentials to do what he's doing than my neighbor, and my neighbor's a postman, and he doesn't even have season tickets to the NFL.
God bless him.
God bless him.
God bless him. Rest in peace, Bill Tobin.
And I do not dislike Mel Kiper.
Oh, I don't either.
But that was still fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. Taylor Swift's new album, The Tortured Poets Department, released at midnight last night, followed by a surprise second album releasing at 2 a.m. making it a 31-song double album. The first single, Fortnite, that you're hearing right now, she collaborated with Post Malone on that. I listened to this for about an hour and a half today working out. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal album.
Well, I'll say this. Whether you're a Swiftie, you know what they call them?
Yeah.
Or whether you're old and don't know much about Taylor Swift or anywhere in between, if you try to deny that she's a marvelous musician, whether you like it or not, you're crazy. So I believe you. I do believe you. The country folks love her. The pop folks love her. It's amazing what a megastar she's become.
In terms of
star value, this is Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Without the controversy, without the same kind of, she is Michael Jackson. This is Elvis and Michael Jackson in today's day and age. It's pretty amazing.
It's stunning that she put this record together while she was having this amazing Eras tour. But I can't recommend it enough. And I'm not even a huge fan, but I listened to it because my daughter really likes Taylor Swift,
very
Avery.
Cool.
And I was really blown away by it. So great stuff from Taylor Swift. All right, shout out to loyal listener Chad Kuhn, who submitted two items for headlines. I always appreciate that.
Yep.
Today in 1980, Brian Johnson joined AC/DC as its new frontman after Bon Scott's tragic death. And character actor Tim Curry turned 78 today. Happy birthday, Tim. Tim Curry's credits include the Rocky Horror Picture Show, Clue, It. Now, that was the TV movie. He played Pennywise in the TV movie in the 80s. Legend with Tom Cruise, where he played the devil. And Home Alone 2. So happy birthday, Tim Curry. And we'll get out of here on this. Reminder, CBS is replaying the Billy Joel concert tonight.
Are they going to try and get to all of it?
We'll see.
Okay, they should get to. I'm going to watch, okay?
I hope there's not any breaking news.
You don't want to hear me. If they don't play the whole thing. Tim Curry, by the way, in Rocky Horror was magnificent.
Oh, yeah.
Was just absolutely magnificent. That's right. Billy Joel tonight, because they cut it off, they're forced to play it again. I'm glad they are. One segment to go. We'll have it for you. Nice job, by the way,
Thank you.
Headlines. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now back to a Big Chief Tire Friday on The Frangie Show. Big Chief Tire. Visit BigChiefService.com.
You can. Come on, hey. I'm in this Al Green thing. I can't shake it. It's like an addiction.
You got a fever.
I got a fever, and I need more Al Green. No way to solve it. More Al Green. So I see this thing on Twitter, this Al Green. I can't stop it. Did you know that Reverend Green, the song Walking on Memphis, which is one of the greatest songs of all time, Walking on Memphis, one of the greatest songs of all time, when Mark Cohn, who wrote the song, mentions Reverend Green, you talking about Al Green?
How about that?
See there?
I did not know that.
Well, I'm here for it. I'm a font.
You are.
Of information. Useless, perhaps, but information nonetheless.
It's not
nonetheless.
Useless. It's Americana.
Love Al. I've been singing Al Green all week long. I mean, you can't. It's like the earworm. I can't get rid of it. This is such a good
song. Well, why would you want to get rid of it?
I don't want. Well, great point. I don't want to. Who doesn't love Al Green? If you don't
communist.
Love Al Green, yeah, your loving is wrong and you're a communist. Yeah. Well said. It's exactly right. I'm in a good mood. I'm happy. Let's give away some tickets. You got anything in there, JJ? What do you got?
I do. I have a pair of tickets to see AEW Wrestling Dynamite April 24th at Daly's Place. So what do you want to do?
How about caller? You want four? Is four a good number?
Yeah, four is good.
Caller four.
Like a fatal four-way.
Yeah, 641-1010. Caller four, and you're on your way to see AEW as we talk a little bit about Al Green. Tonight, by the way, this is kind of cool. I'm very excited. You know, we opened this new ballpark, the Reagan Baseball Complex, and Walk Off Charities has the honor of running it, and we kind of designed it, and we're very involved in it. And we're holding the Gateway Conference Baseball Tournament. So this is the 72nd year of the Gateway Conference.
Wow.
There's been 72nd year. Of these 72 years, my alma mater, Inglewood, has won it 7 times of 72, including my senior year.
Oh, that's cool.
So we were really good. My senior year in 76, we were really good, and we won the Gateway Conference. Didn't win it for another 20 years. And by the way, that was the fourth time. So only won it 2 more times after that. So Inglewood has not been great at baseball. Okay. But we were really good my senior year. We opened a new ballpark. Tonight, Inglewood is playing for the championship at the Gateway Conference.
That is awesome.
Isn't that cool?
And
good luck to the Ravens. Good luck to Atlantic Coast, too. I don't want to, they're all good local schools. But my alma mater is Inglewood. And they, tonight at 6 o'clock, in about 8 minutes, the first pitch, at our new Bregan Baseball Complex, the Inglewood Rams are playing for the championship at the Gateway Conference. I'm going right there.
Baseball gods.
Pretty cool, isn't it? Yeah. It's funny how stuff works out, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is. So if you got nothing to do and you want to see some really good baseball, the Gateway Conference is really good level of baseball. And so many of the Gateway teams and area teams, St. John's County teams, public and private, have been kind enough to play home games at the Bregan Baseball Complex, part of our South State Baseball Series. We played 26 games there, and all of those games were fundraisers for walk-off. And so thank you for doing that to all these local schools. So if you've got nothing going on a beautiful night tonight, go watch a little baseball. There's all kind of baseball. Jumbo Shrimp in Town, the River City Rumble, JU and UNF, that's at 7 o'clock tonight. And the Gateway Conference Championship is at 6 o'clock at the Bregan Baseball Complex at Fort Family Park, which is where I'm headed in just a few minutes. So that's going to be a lot of end a week, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so folks, that's our program. Thanks for being part of it so very much. Next week, it's all Draft Talk. Draft Talk starting on Monday. We'll be here same bad time, same bad channel. But don't go anywhere tonight. Rick Ballew is next. He goes into the night. For Hayes and JJ, I'm Frank Frangie. So long, everybody.